Welcome to Mortified, the Friendship Quest, a podcast where two Twitter friends recommend media in the hopes the other will like it. This week, we watched the storybook anime Princess Tutu. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Layla.
Layla. this one was a lot. Let me give a quick summary. Okay, so there's this duck who becomes a real girl at a ballet school, and she falls in love with a prince. And she gets this pendant that gives her the ability to transform into Princess Tutu, who is a magical girl persona who's, like, really good at ballet dancing and also can do magic spells. But the problem is that the prince has lost his heart because he has, he had to shatter it in order to fight with the raven. Also, the prince is part of a story where he is involved with, like, a crow, but he was taken out of the story and put into this town. And also, there's a knight from a different story, or maybe the same story, that's like his weird controlling boyfriend / roommate. And there's also the crow's avatar / daughter, Princess Krehu, who's like the opposite of Princess Tutu, and they fight over the princess heart. And at the end of the story, it's like revealed that this was all being created by Drosselmeyer, who had the power to write stories into reality, and in fact this town that they've all lived in is a splinter reality from which all stories converge, and Drosselmeyer's been secretly from the grave because he built a literal fucking machine to write from the grave this story with his superpower. And they figure out how to fix all that, and you know, it has a happy ending. Does that about summarize it?
Yeah, as much as it can.
Why did you do this to me, Layla?
Okay, so a couple reasons. It is my mission in life to get as many people to watch Princess Tutu as I humanly can. I've gotten about 6, which I'm doing pretty good. But I mean, okay. Okay. So, genuinely speaking, like, it's a litmus test for, like, me to see how wild of a narrative my friends are, like, willing to accept. But also, like, you and I talk all the time about these, like, overarching themes of, like, children in adult danger and anime and, like, how wild it is. And this was just such a perfect amalgamation of things. I had you lulled into a false sense of security this many weeks since. So I'm like, fuck it, we're gonna just drop Princess Tutu and see what happens.
I see. You tricked me.
Mm-hmm. I did. I'm so sorry. I
can't believe
it. I'm not sorry.
No, you're not even remotely sorry.
No, this is such joy for me.
Love to drink my pain. here's the thing about Princess Tutu is, like, I don't know that it was, right, the weirdness did, like, after about episode 6, like, I got into it. Like, I was like, okay, so there's animals and they can talk and the cat teacher who wants to marry everyone. Like, I was like, okay, I was into that. I feel like that this show has the same, it has a startlingly similar structure to Neon Genesis Evangelion, which is like, you get introduced to the world, there's a protagonist that has a lot of self-doubt, and they have to, there's a series of arcs where they have like a monster of the week sort of situation, where like in Ava, like there's different angels or whatever they call them that they have to fight like every week for like, I don't know, 7 episodes. And then, like, in this one, there's, like, different heart shards that have been possessing people that, like, for about, you know, 7 episodes, Princess Tutu has to go through and, like, find the princess heart shards. And then at the end, there's, like, a big world-consuming cataclysm. And, in Ava, it's the Lilith. And in Princess Tutu, it's the crow who who makes his blood rain down on the town and turned them all into crow humanoids. And I don't know, I just, like, between that, like, I did not like Ava, and I unfortunately did not like this one. Maybe I would have enjoyed it more if it was in the, like, the Japanese. I assume it was originally in Japanese, but I listened to the English dub, and I don't know if it was the voice acting or just, like, the weird, bad dialogue, but, like, it was extremely off-putting just to, like, hear the, like, because they all look like they're, like, maybe in the 6th grade, and they all talk about falling in love and being in love and caring about someone, and it's so it's it didn't work for me.
It takes this like notion that I think we talked about a little bit in Stargazing of a teen's emotions being heightened, and it takes that to the biggest extreme I think I've ever seen. Like, these, you're right, they're like sixth graders probably, but they're talking about love as this like cataclysmic, life-changing, like soul-binding thing, and I'm like, y'all are just like small and have crushes, but this is fine. I watched it back in for the first time in 2008 actually.
So 12 years ago.
Yes, for the first time. I've seen it multiple times. Don't fucking come for me.
Yeah.
Actually, do come for me. Call me out on this one. I've seen the show at least 5 times. But anyway, I can't remember if I ever saw the English. I know for the first time I watched the Japanese. Because you're right, I think there's some things that are a little bit off-putting about a show like this being dubbed, because it does rely a lot on like kind of more anime conventions of storytelling. So like some of the names, some of the Uzura has that like speech quirk, like that doesn't just like flow right in English, like adding Zura to the end of all her sentences.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, I feel like a lot of nuance probably lost in what they're saying, because I don't ever remember their conversations being, they were like soap opera-esque dramatic, but I don't ever remember them being truly off-putting. Then again, I watched it in 2008, and now every time I watch it, I watch it with these like love goggles on, where I'm like, this is just like a perfect nugget of just such absurdity, and it's so insane. And I just love things that are like this level of crazy. I don't know why, but I'm drawn to them inherently. So I don't know, maybe it's like my nostalgia goggles on, but I just don't remember. I think there was probably a lot lost in the English. I think you're right. Because I just don't remember the dialogue being that off.
I mean, I don't think that it was any different than like a regular like anime, because anime is frequently like very high drama, high emotions, like you know, it's hyperbolic, it's exaggerated, and that doesn't really bother me as much when I'm just reading the text and like hearing it the actors speak Japanese, because I don't know any Japanese. But when you hear it in English, like a language that you understand, and sort of understand that this would be a very weird thing to hear, that's what I found off-putting. Also, there's just some very strange choices. I think we could probably start with the characters and like work our way through what I liked and how you feel about them, starting with Muto. The
hate that bitch,
the prince. He sucks so bad.
He sucks so hard.
He, even at the end where he gets his heart together and he's like a cool prince with his sword, he's still just like, I'm gonna save you, Rue. I'm the prince and I will protect everyone. And like, that works in Kingdom Hearts, but it does not work here, because we don't have fucking 100 hours of him palling around with Donald and Goofy. We have him, Muto, being like catatonic and being just like, at the beginning, just like, I'll do whatever Fakir wants, I can't feel anything, till like being this weird puppet of the crows, and he's just like, oh, you must hate everyone except for me. And like, there is a world in which I'm into that, but like, Muto sucks so much. His delivery's bad, his character's just a huge douche.
Yeah, there's literally like nothing lovable about him, and it's one of those stories where like the whole thing hinges on Duck being so in love with him. But you're watching it, you're like, this little boy sucks. But then again, like, having been a girl in middle school, you do develop crushes on some boys who suck. So, like, I do understand.
Yeah.
But also, like, he's so, even when he does have his heart back, oh, bless you, baby. even when he does have his heart back, he's still just, like, extremely passive and single-minded. Like, a real, if you want me to look up to a hero of that caliber, like, a real one would have probably found a way to save Rue and also not sacrifice Duck's humanity that she worked really hard for. But instead he was like, no, she's my one true love despite all this work you've done for me and all this emotional and physical labor that you've done for me, Princess Tutu slash Duck slash an actual fucking duck. And even though you and my weird best friend, ex-abusive boyfriend who is being kind of a dick to me, well, super a dick to me in order to save his own life and also mine, you know, instead of letting you two develop whatever the fuck's happening now with you two, I'm gonna just turn you into a duck and he can write by the pond with you for the rest of time.
Yeah, that was a wild ending. I'm glad that you brought that up because it does contextualize. I didn't really understand Fakir's, I thought at the beginning he just like wanted to save Muto, but that puts it in better contrast that Fakir's whole thing is like trying to save himself. Fate is like he's gonna die if he, you know, finishes his story or whatever.
Yeah, so he's the, like you said, the reincarnation of, like, the ghost knight or whatever. And he, basically, at the end of his story, he's read ahead and he gets torn apart by a crow. And he's like, I don't want that shit. Mm-hmm. So he has been doing everything in his power to stop the story from coming true until his character arc to me. Did you have any other thoughts about Muto before we get into Fakir? Because I love that fucking goth-ass piece of shit.
No, I hate Muto a lot. That's all I really have to say about him. He sucks and he's boring.
Yeah, he sucks and he's boring. He's really bad. Fakir, though.
Fakir's good. I like Fakir.
Fakir extremely good. Yeah, he does a lot of things out of like sheer self-preservation, but I think his character arc was like, how did you feel about it? Because I found it the most satisfying of the lot.
I think it was pretty good, right? There's a lot of like, you know, Avatar The Last Airbender just came out on, like, Netflix, so everybody's been talking about that recently. And there's a lot of talk about how Zuko's, like, the only truly good redemption arc. He doesn't, like, just have a big sacrifice at the end that nullifies all the shitty stuff he does. I think it's... Fakir has not quite as good, but still, like, okay. Like, at the beginning, he's, like, kind of an abusive, controlling guy who just, like, basically tells Muto what to do, whatever he wants. And at one point, he does, like, slap him across the face, which is, like, not great. But then, cool. You know, we do get to see all the things that Fakir goes through, you know, halfway through the season. He becomes like this, he gets the sword and he, you know, tries to take up, you know, fight the crow and, you know, help Duck Tutu restore Muto's heart. So like, you know, and then he, later on we see like he writes and he's trying to, you know, find the best outcome for everybody. So I do feel like he does get a proper redemption arc. And the thing about Fakir is that he's not just just like this weird conflicted guy. He's also like got some of the only funny lines in the show. He's just like kind of grumpy. And like there's that one part where Duck accident, like some her Duck's friends, which are weird, at the academy, they give a letter. They write a love letter from Duck to Fakir, and Uzra delivers it, and then like Duck was saying, man, I don't even know what Fakir would think about love. He'd probably say something like, don't waste your time on trifles. And then like when he does actually get this letter, he's just like, don't waste your time on trifles, idiot. And I was like, hell yeah. Fakir, you rule. So he's good.
Yeah, he rules so fucking hard. I just love like a grumpy ass, this like scene kid who like writes for fun. Oh god, he's just so, I love a grouch ass. I was talking about, I'm watching Haikyuu right now, the volleyball anime.
Oh, okay.
Which is honestly fucking incredible. I highly recommend Haikyuu. But they're, one of the main characters in there, he's Kageyama. He's just like, he starts out as kind of a bitch boy. And I was like, I didn't know where he was going to go. But I was talking to my friend last night and I was like, yeah, I would fucking unravel a galaxy for Kageyama at this point. Because there's just something in me that loves a grouch ass that's incapable of expressing emotions. I deeply relate to that, I think, just as a human being, because I too am incapable of expressing genuine emotion. But I love that little boy so much. And it's one of those real bittersweet anime endings where I'm just like, man, I wish y'all got to like feel out whatever was happening there, because you were actually good for each other.
Yeah.
Unlike Duck doing emotional slave labor for a shitty nothing boy.
Yeah. I like the way it ended, though. I kind of like that it wasn't like a completely happy ending. Maybe that's just because I was raised Catholic, but I like it when it there's a little bit of sadness with that comes along with the good ending. How do we feel about Rue?
I started out not liking her when I first watched the show, but like as I watch it more and more over the years, I think especially considering like not to be deep on me, but like my personal experiences with disappointing everybody and succumbing to the burdens of society, I feel bad for her.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad that like her and Duck got to have this like strained but active friendship despite what was going on with their like superhero knight personas.
I did like that there is this one point where Rue, at the beginning, Rue and Duck are walking back, and then Rue is like, "You know, I've never talked with another woman like this before." And I was like, "Oh man, I'm glad you guys figured out how to break the Bechdel test and acknowledge it." Crushed it.
They did because they're both obsessed with
That's the
Mito for
thing, is that
no
this show does
fucking
not
reason.
even closely break the Bechdel test in any way, besides like that one scene where it's two women talking about ba dance. And then the rest of the show is about boys. But like I sort of had a similar reaction, except like I liked Rue less as the story went on, because not necessarily because of the way like any of her character's actions, just because of the way that she was presented in the narrative. Like it, like I was saying, the monster of the week sort of thing, like where she just keeps showing up and doing the same shit over and over again. Like I feel like you can do three episodes where she like has this failure, and then in the third arc it sort of comes to fruition. But I feel like doing like the same thing where it's just like, oh, I'm gonna eat this person's heart. Oh no, I failed. I'm gonna do this person's heart. Oh no, I fucked that one up too. And just like they do it over and over again, and I thought it was a little bit too much. I liked Rue as like a person, not as Crahey. Like I thought her. I mean, like. Her Crahey persona is cool and all, but like I thought the better characterization was her just like being this cool dancer who like, I mean, you know, we talked about how bad the Muto romance is, but like, you know, I like that she was like the elite dancer that was like dating the hottest boy in school. Like I like that shit. I mean, I don't think that I've said this on the podcast before, but like Mean Girls is like one of my favorite movies ever. So like I love that dynamic. I really didn't like the way that. The Rue and slash like the Raven like as her dad narrative was. It was just like basically her dad berating her over and over again. That was kind of a bummer. And like I get that that stuff gets resolved at the end, but I just didn't find it enjoyable to watch.
So I think part of that has to do with the structure of the show. So when I was reading episode summaries before we started recording, just to kind of give myself a refresher, the show is split. And this is not something I knew because I watched it like you did in one sitting, without like any broadcast television structure to it. But there are two distinct seasons to it, which is not something I knew. Like 25 episodes to me is a standalone, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it makes sense, like, 'cause like right at episode 13, like that's the like where you would normally get the completion of the arc, but then like it completely changes because we realize Muto's been poisoned by the crow's blood or whatever.
Yeah, and then you get season two that angles towards the calamity. That's not something I knew. Another thing that I did not know until I was doing a little bit of light research is that so this anime came out in
2005, right?
2002.
2002.
Yes. So excuse it in all of its
Oh, yeah.
2002-ness. In 2005, however, the Princess Tutu manga based on the anime came out. And I
Weird.
did just like a touch of light research into it. There's only two volumes. The covers look bizarre.
I bet.
Like, just physical anatomy does not exist at the cover that I'm fucking looking at right now. And here is from a blog called Manga Test Drive or Manga Test Drive. Here is a quote from this review that I read that made me just glee for a little while. Oh, here it is. Princess Tutu was a mistake. Not the
Wow.
Not the show, mind you. The show is one of my favorites. It's the manga version that shouldn't exist. Virtually everything about the manga is a mistake, right down to the choice of magazine to publish it
Woof.
in. It's a lot, and apparently it makes a lot of changes. So none of the animal people except for Mr. Cat make it into the manga.
Okay.
And Adel isn't a puppet, but it's just a human lady with giant boobs.
Great. Good.
And this review says, I suspect those fanciful elements were excised in the hopes of pleasing the male readership. Okay, I
Yeah.
don't think there's a male readership.
No, I don't think so. It's probably just me and then whoever whatever other dudes you managed to convince watch this show.
Probably more now, but in 2002, I don't think any
Yeah,
young
no
boys are
fucking
watching
way.
this.
That's
But
wild.
that was just like a fun little aside, because there was said Princess Tutu manga, and you know how it usually goes: is somebody publishes a manga, then you make a anime based off
Yeah,
of
it's
it.
the
But sometimes it
reverse. That's
goes
very
backwards.
strange.
I've never seen it go backwards successfully, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that this was the. There's only two volumes. It didn't run.
The Kingdom Hearts manga is very good. I will have you recommend that, but that's probably an exception.
I would love to read that shit.
What?
I would love to read that
Oh, it oh,
shit. That's
I'll send you some
amazing.
links. There it's pretty good. You can get it online for free. But one interesting thing that this show does is the inclusion of Drosselmeyer as like this overarching narrator of the story. Like he is not only the narrator, like in the sense that like he does voiceovers and shit, but like he also is like the grand architect pulling the strings of like the whole plot. And like in the end, like they're trying to fight not directly against him. Well, actually a little bit directly against him, because he does bring Tutu out of the story. But like he is sort of like the big bad pulling the strings behind everything, even though he's not actually the big monster they have to fight and kill at the end. And I think that's an interesting choice, certainly. I don't know if it worked entirely. Maybe that's just because I thought Drosselmeyer was so fucking weird. I think we wanted to talk about just like how meta narratives and story structure can be used effectively.
Yeah, so this is like a story wrapped with, well, several stories wrapped within a story, right? And there's that moment where Duck like looks out beyond the little town where they live, and there's just like a wall.
Yeah.
So the implication is that this is just a story town, and that's it. So I think there is this interesting, I guess, discussion to be had. Well, not even so much. I think I just, how did you feel about it? Like, did it bring in a question, any like, I hate to even like call it existential, any like prior existential thinking about self-determination and destiny? Because that is like a running theme through this story, is can you write your own story, or can you beat your own odds? And I don't know, how did you feel about that? Did you think it was executed well? Did it make you feel anything? Like, I know you didn't like the show necessarily, but did any moments like get you at all?
I mean, as far as like my thoughts on predestination, as a former Catholic, predestination is a heresy, and should be excised at all costs. But like I do think that there are some, especially with Fakir, like him constantly trying to avoid his fate of being killed. Like I think that was actually done pretty well. Like you can see like how worried he is, and like he's doing all this research to try to figure out how to change his story. I like that, like the whole concept of trying to change your fate, like Duck trying to, the whole thing is like if you confess your love to Muto, you'll turn into a speck of light, and that never happens because Rue ends up saying it, and Muto ends up with her. So I did like the way that the story sort of subverted that. Like there's a lot of classical stories where about people trying to prevent prophecies that end up, having them come true. I mean, that's Oedipus, right? That's Cassandra. So I liked that. As far as the things that got me, there was one, which isn't necessarily as far as like determining your fate, but it was in the context of like being an author, where Drosselmeyer is like talking about how, it's in my notes. Because he's like talking about how much Tutu like loves Muto, and he's like, oh, ha ha ha! I want to be so tragic when she confesses her love, and it kills her because I love tragedy. And I kind of like that. I don't know that this is intentional, but I do like the idea that the author like has completely misinterpreted his own characters, like because he clearly does not see like the actual relationship forming between Fakir and Duck, and like how his characters are trying to break free from his narrative. And you know, you'll see people who are professional authors speak about how like their characters sort of take over their writing, and they're like, oh no, I didn't write this, my character just propelled themselves through it. You know, I've never had that experience as a writer, but like I think that they sort of illustrate that pretty well with like with his Fakir superpower of like just like writing about Duck, like he's not even really consciously thinking about it. So I like that bit.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if I've necessarily experienced that. Well, okay, so the thing we have to talk about when we talk about fiction is that there's sometimes people will say like, oh, well, the character didn't do shit. It's just you set up, you are the author, you are the person, they are not real, they don't have agency or responsibility. You set this up, and you perhaps inadvertently set up something, a logical conclusion that you couldn't have predicted at the outset, but it's still on you. And the reason we have to make sure we establish that is because sometimes people are like, well, my character did this like shitty problematic thing because that's how it wrote it. No, you wrote that. You have to take responsibility. That being said, I think there's a lot of, especially in like queer fandom, there's a lot of this phenomenon of you wrote it gay. Which is a lot of stories that shoehorn heterosexual relationships together sometimes don't realize that the authors are just so allergic to female characters that they end up writing these like incredibly compelling borderline homoerotic relationships and then being like, oh, they're just friends. The best example of this is Naruto and Sasuke.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a fact.
Like, you wrote it so, like, I was watching it, I'm like, you wrote it gay. And I'm usually not one of the, I don't know, I'm never very, like, passionate about, like, quote-unquote, like, shipping or whatever. Like, it's never been my scene. I tend to enjoy canon the way it is. But Naruto and Sasuke, and I think Riku and Sora from Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
I was playing Kingdom Hearts 3, and Sora, like, sacrifices himself to save Riku, and I'm like, uh-oh? I see it. Like, I see it now. I see it. I get it. I used to not see it. I see it now. But, yeah, it's this phenomenon of, like, authors not quite knowing, on a meta level, not quite knowing where their creations are going, but also within stories like this. How many stories have we watched, right? Between villains with, where the villain considers himself, like, a objective, emotionless narrator guiding their, and their goal being kind of like this quote unquote, how do I explain this? You know, all the villains that consider themselves all powerful and objective and borderline godlike, that think that their end is the correct one. How many times have we seen those villains get their stories overturned when the protagonist relies on the power of love and subjectivity and emotion to overcome, right? Whether it's to overcome their personal physical limits or to overcome the expectations of the antagonist. So in that, I thought that was like a really nice a bit of layering that Princess Tutu does. I think probably on accident. I don't think this was really intentionally. But it is interesting when you have a Drosselmeyer's direct descendant, which is Fakir, writing himself out of his own story while still being within a story. So I don't know. I thought it was really, that's one of the things that really endears this objectively not great show to me, is like, it's just, it does a lot of really great things on accident and a lot of really shitty things on purpose, but I think that's okay. In that sense of like, there is no such thing as guilty pleasures. Like, I think I can objectively and unequivocally enjoy the show knowing it's like kind of bad. But it does some really nice things accidentally, and I think that's so human. And I think that's what I'm drawn to. And again, I think a lot of that probably got wiped away in the dub, but yeah, it's just a very human experience to have to wrestle with self-determination and willpower and how much do you really have in the way your life goes, and to have a story about stories wrestle with that, I think is like the most human thing, the most human narrative.
Yeah, definitely. So did you have thoughts on like how this story uses familiar characters and narratives we've already heard to like create this new story about like self-determination?
Well, it does, it kind of does the Soul Eater thing where it's like it's characters we know, but like it's just kind of the name, you know?
Yeah,
like Drosselmeyer is like a let me get like a one sentence. He's from the Nutcracker. Yeah, he's the godfather of Fritz and Marie, and he gives Marie this doll, and it's ugly as fuck, and Marie's like, fuck this doll in the ballet, and then she realizes the doll has magical powers. So he's like a storytelling element also in the Nutcracker, but like here he's like a writer, which is kind of, watch me say that, and he is a writer in the fucking ballet too. But yeah, so it does that really interesting thing where like it just kind of recycles concepts that we're used to, not necessarily even characters except for Drosselmeyer, and like, okay, so there's the doll drummer girl, hers, like the concept of like having that kind of benign sentient helper, semi-sentient helper, is very familiar. The Raven is a very I would say almost overtly symbolic.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose.
Villain. The whole thing's very on the nose. You have the hero prince. You have the, the anti-hero. It's narratively, it's structured like a ballet. And let me be the first to say, I would not adapt a ballet for television. So did you have any feelings about it? Because my feelings are basically like, I just thought it was, basically I think they used the names to establish familiarity with the role the character was going to play, but then they didn't actually do anything with their actual backgrounds.
Yeah, I mean I did feel like it had like a lot of novel uses for pretty worn tropes, and like that's pretty common in anime, is taking like an established story and sort of making a weird twist on it. But like, I don't really know. I feel like the story often got in its own way. Like just the A plot really sort of steamrolled over any of like the more interesting B plots. Like I thought Adel / Uzra was like kind of like an interesting character, like the concept of like a doll that, you know, became human. Like I really liked her, but like they kept using her as just like a way to like push the narrative along. Like there's the point at the end where she, Uzura, like turns the story back, like literally turns the gears of the story back, and I thought that was like pretty poignant. I like the idea of like a doll, like somebody who had used to be a doll, taking agency over their creator and sort of like, you know, throwing a wrench in their plans. Like I liked that sort of imagery and symbolism. There's just so much weird love stuff that it just kind of bogs everything else down. Like, I also just don't know anything about ballet, and that didn't help either. Unfortunately, I was like pretty disengaged there at the end. I was just like, please get this over with.
Yeah, so I mean, the narrative structure of ballet is like kind of like the narrative structure of opera, are just very like drawn out, and they rely on these like really long musical sequences. There's also the consideration that this story is deliberately also shaped like a folk tale that you would read. But the problem is, both ballets and folktales are capsule experiences, right? You go and you sit a ballet for 2 hours, you get the story. Folktales, generally not that fucking long. They're only long enough to keep the attention of like a child that you would tell it to, right? They're usually cautionary. So that being said, yeah, I don't know if television was the right. I think this should have been a feature and should have moved at a fucking, or maybe like an OVA with like 6 long episodes, you know, and just like moved at a fucking clip, because they tried to shove so many things in there. Like just speaking critically of like, in terms of the narrative, like you mentioned, there's the Monster of the Week thing, there's the Love Quadrangle, there's the story within a story, and then the Drosselmeyer angle, and all the different folktales you have to keep track of, and then the ballet thing, and the school angle, and Mr. Cat. There's just so much happening. It's like they were trying to stuff shit to make it, excuse me, to make 25 or 26 episodes. And then, again, like you said, the main plot overrides all the actually, like, charming, good things about this show. And I think when I watched it for the first time when I was a lot younger, I didn't really think critically about stuff like that. But I don't know. I think it's nice to be able to grow up with this and like still have a soft spot for it in my heart and be able to engage with it critically. Versus I think showing it to you for the first time as like an adult 26-year-old. I don't know. I feel like I would have reacted similarly to how you reacted to it if I watched it for the first time just now, instead of having watched it for the first time 12 years ago and then have rewatched it since with nostalgia goggles on. So
yeah. So if you were the CEO of Mamadova Corp, how would you try to reboot it beyond just like changing the structure and taking out a lot of the fluff? Like what is your idealized Princess Tutu? Is it actually a ballet?
No, because that's just Swan Lake. I was trying to think about this question a little bit, because I felt like it would come up. I was trying to think about this question a little bit yesterday, and I couldn't really think of a good answer, because I feel like it could go two ways, right? I feel like either like an OVA, like a limited short series, will you trim just so much fat? Just make lean really into like the magical girl shit, really lean into like the meta narrative of the story within a story, and give Drosselmeyer a little bit more to do. I mean, there's just like a lot of rewriting that would have to get done to make it good, including making Muto like actually a decent character.
Yeah. Instead of just
like a air balloon with a wig on it.
I don't know if that can be saved. That's gonna be hard to salvage that.
He sucks so bad. Or at least having everybody in the end realize that he sucks and leaving him with the kind of end game mission of becoming worthy of all the love he's already received. That might be nice too. Like, especially like, okay, so if you want to make the ending, either Muto gives up his powers and his divinity to give Duck her humanity back, I think that might be interesting. Or having Duck earn her humanity. I don't think this should end with her being a fucking duck. That sucks so bad.
It's pretty brutal, yeah.
Oh, poor baby. She deserves better. She deserves to dance.
Yeah.
But either that or Duck having earned her humanity on her own terms, and then having Muto and Rue go off on like a quest at the end to be like, we have to figure out how to earn the love we've already received, and also like how to love.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of leaving it open-ended for them. The reason I don't think Duck should be a duck is because it just, the narrative isn't structured like a tragedy, and to have it end like that, it just feels really sudden and abrupt and weird and not like the narrative of a folktale, which is, again, what it's trying to be. But either that or have it be a novel, because I feel like, actually, no, never mind, that wouldn't work, because it's all about fucking ballet.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to convey.
But, yeah, so I think a reboot as a limited series might be kind of the best way to go. But honestly, I don't think it should be rebooted. It was made in 2002. There's a lot of gender politics in there that I don't enjoy. I don't know. I think it is a perfect encapsulation of early 2000s, like, shoujo trends, and I think it should stay that way.
Did you ever get into other shoujo stuff, like Fruits Basket or anything? I mean, I know you did Ouran High School.
Love Ouran High School Health Club. Oh, perfect show. What a charming, beautiful, beautiful little show. I was more... I used to go to my public library and, like, take out a lot of random manga and see what I liked. I remember liking Skip Beat. Couldn't tell you what that was about now. I also remember really liking Magic Knight Ray Earth, which is like Sailor Moon but with elements. I used to do a lot of like magical girl slice of life shit. President is a Maid, that one still love, even though I reread the manga recently, it does not hold up. I did a lot of skipping around between like shoujo and then like shit that was like not for my age group. So like Helsing, but yeah, so I have a really long, deep foundation in like shoujo and its conventions. So I think I'm numb to a lot of like bullshit that it pulls. Cause it does pull a lot of bullshit.
There's some stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of unnecessary nudity.
We've talked about this. Yeah, I don't know.
It's Japan.
It's early 2000s anime. You gotta just fucking...
Yeah, you just have to sort of deal with it. But honestly, it's not as bad as some other stuff that we've talked about, so it's fine.
Oh, it's certainly not as bad as, like, random shit I've clicked on Netflix. That's for fucking sure.
That's true. did you have anything to talk about as far as the Boruto complex goes?
I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. We keep talking about children being put in adult danger, and I think that's emblematic of like narratives geared towards younger people, because those are the stakes that match the level of like emotion that teens experience.
Yeah.
And it's their narrative is about problem solving and learning how to work together and blah 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 blah. But insofar as we've talked about it, it's mostly been the biggest one, I suppose, Stargazing and Kill la Kill are female centric. But Kill la Kill is very like overtly subversive of like the shonen tropes, and Stargazing was like a much softer slice of life narrative. In terms of like the kind of danger that female protagonists get put in, did it read? I'm trying to think how to word this question. In terms of the types of danger that magical girl and like female centric shoujo anime manga stories, even stories just like geared at little girls in the Western narratives, did it feel like the stakes were at all? How did the stakes feel different? Did you feel like they were as effective as the stakes in something like Naruto or Boruto? And is it... Do you think there was a different danger?
Right. The question of stakes is very weird because it's hard to judge between, like, when the show is trying to get you to take something seriously and when Mr. Cat threatens to have you be his wife every episode. Like,
and it is a threat.
It is a threat. He threatens to punish. It's not just Duck. It's like multiple students who'd be like, "I'll have you marry me," and I love that. But yeah, I think it's weird, right? With a lot of shonen, right? It's always very hyper violent. Like, there's always children, you know, carrying swords three times their length and whipping them around and stuff. This one was a different kind of danger in that, like. It was the danger of losing yourself, and losing the things that you care about, which is good, and I feel like we should probably have more of. Like, I'm all for hyper-violent narratives, but I think those could be improved by having these stakes of, like, having emotional consequences, like seeing the person that you love become somebody completely different. But besides that, yeah, I feel like, you know, the emotional stakes were appropriate. You know, the only thing is like there at the end where there's like a big, you know, world ending like scene, like that's sort of when it got a little bit, you know, overboard. But that's sort of like the narrative of all like anime. There's always like one big final fight at the end. So like I didn't think it was necessarily unrealistic. I thought that the stakes, like as far as the danger goes, was much more realistic, for like a kid to be like, you know, worried about their the relationships as opposed to like being eaten by a giant snake or something. So I like the way they did the danger threshold was lower, but I also thought it was more realistic. Like I thought it worked just as well.
Yeah, I think you bring up an interesting point that there is a lot more like complication to the stakes are more subtle. So like yeah, seeing somebody turn into somebody you don't recognize, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of like, you know, when you watch your like, you know, Naruto and Boruto are like your default examples, but when you watch something like that and it's this like, I will kill your fucking family level of threat. Yeah, I feel like these narratives require you to do a little bit more work mentally to like really understand the stakes. And I think in general, narratives geared at young girls, especially coming out of that like era of shoujo, do that quite a lot. That being said, I think just thinking back on it a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Kill la Kill does an interesting blend of the two, which is something I really appreciated because I, as I'm sure you as well, gendered narratives are like not great.
Yeah,
So
in general.
I do enjoy seeing the narratives kind of evolve past this sort of like women have to deal with the emotional burden and men have to deal with the physical burden because that's how you end up with Sakura being nerfed and Hinata being a fucking housewife and Temari being a housewife. Still mad
Yeah,
about
that's
it.
bad. Like Kill la Kill did a much better job characterizing everyone, like even the side characters. You sort of got where they were coming from, even though it was mostly just like I love Satsuki Kiryu-ing. Like you sort of understood their motivations. Like here in Tutu, like you know the motivations are either Muto or the Crow. Like there's really not much else, but like still like we get to see how those narratives like evolve and change and shape the way that characters interact with each other based on that one motivation, which is good. And I do wish that more things aimed towards young boys were not just making the doll have big boobs and instead like you know trying to teach people about character arcs and development and what it means to care about people. Because when I was a yeah you know when I was a kid, I sort of missed the whole Satsuki or not yeah Sasuke Naruto like love triangle, because I just wanted to watch them punch each other. And if we had a little bit less punching and a little bit more talking about our feelings, I think that we could have a healthier media diet overall.
Yeah, and I really like the way you frame that. In going back real quick to how can you fix this? How can you readapt it? I think you could use those simplified motivations and the folklore framework as a tool instead of something holding the narrative back, which is kind of is happening now. Because like I said, you can't really expand a folk tale and keep it simple like that. It just gets boring and repetitive. But having the characters start out with these really simplistic, rigid motivations, and then as they are gaining determination over their own story, having them become more complicated and have them kind of like waking up from the trance of Drosselmeyer's really simple storytelling, and then have Fakir be an evolution as a storyteller of on Drosselmeyer on writing, because in the end the whole thing is he can only write what is currently happening, and it takes him like real legitimate effort to break from the narrative. Having that be more about only being able to write what is happening because the people around him are gaining the power to write their own story and being powered by like their willpower and their friendship, and only being able to, instead of force the narrative in a certain direction, but instead to just codify what other people are already doing, and have that overpower Drosselmeyer's intentions. Like, basically have him weaken Drosselmeyer's willpower instead of actively construct the narrative. I think that would have been better.
I agree with everything you're saying there. I just wanted to bring up one thing that I thought was really dumb, which was that Drosselmeyer had a physical machine writing the story at the end.
Oh, it was so stupid.
That's really stupid. Like, it would have been fine. It was just like, oh, Drosselmeyer's just doing it from the grave, and there's no, like, reason why having an actual, like, stupid pen that was programmed to write. I was just like, I can't believe you do this to me in the last 4 minutes of your show. Why would you like, destroy your own narrative like that?
It's like the wildest Deus Ex Machina in the world. Oh man. And not in like the fun Promare way where it's like an actual robot called Deus Ex Machina, but like,
it's just a Promare's the shitty, only good lazy movie.
Well, and Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, and Mean Girls.
Thank you for going along on this ride with me. I'm really proud of you for finishing, because I know it must have been tough as like a 26-year-old adult living in the year 2020 to watch this strange shoujo from 2002. but I appreciate that you went on this journey, because again, I think it's a fun litmus test for like watching people's prior conditioning to anime, but also like conditioning to the brand of storytelling that this specific like subgenre of shoujo brings. And it's just, I always love seeing how people react to it, so thank you for letting me, for being my human experiment. I promise I will recommend something normal next time.
Yeah, I probably won't be rewatching this one, but
I fucking will.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I watched it, so now I sort of know why you do the stupid hand thing all the time.
It's good. It's a good hand thing.
It's a hand thing.
It's the only salvageable.
That might be true. Layla, next week I want you to read one of my favorite books of the last year, one of my favorite books ever, a novel titled Steel Crow Saga by Paul Kruger. You were able to read Gideon in like a couple days, so I'm sure you'll be able to get through Steel Crow Saga in that as much time, if not sooner. It is a show that the creator describes as a cross between Avatar the Last Airbender and Pokemon, and I think you will love it. And I'm very, very excited to talk to you about it, because I guarantee it's up your alley.
I just went on the Goodreads page to see how many pages it is. It's 528. Gideon was 440. So no, it's fine. I can do that in like 3 days. Don't me. I got this. It's fine. I can speed read. But the thing that comes up is your review.
Well, oops.
It's because we're friends on Goodreads.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I'm really excited. Okay, you know, I'm Chaz. That'll be here on Tuesday, and I'll I'm excited. I'm excited to fuck it up. It's going to be great. And then I have to think about something relatively normal and calm to give you.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Do you have a quote from Princess Tutu you'd like to sign off with? Or no, plugs.
Oh, plugs. Yeah. So still at Lails is at LEYLSES. Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram. I'm working on redrawing the first 13 pages of my comic, astralheartcomic.com. Go read it. It's about dealing with inherited family trauma, and also it's a romance, so go do that.
You can find me on Twitter at AaronSXL, where I talk about coronavirus, bad Indiana politics, and just the weird, wild stuff that happened to me in my childhood that I remember sometimes.
And also your fucking killer high school essay about Aaron Shock's reaction. Yeah,
holy shit. We can talk about Peoria politics one day. And you can find me on YouTube at Aaron S. Me and my friends, who are both ex-evangelicals and I'm an ex-Catholic, review Christian media. We just did Darren Aronofsky's Noah from 2014, and it was fucking wild. So if you have any interest in that sort of thing, please watch our review once I get that up. But yeah, Layla, do you wanna take us home?
Okay, yeah, here we go. There's a perfect quote from Fakir. From perfect baby Fakir, who I love, because he's a grouch, grouch
Great.
ass. She couldn't be drowning in there, could she? Can ducks drown? No, knowing her, it is possible.
Excellent.